This is Tall Tale TV, your podcast for sci-fi and fantasy short stories. This story has multiple parts. To listen to the entire story in one place, visit talltaletv.com/series. A Matter of Scale by Jonathan Burgess, Part 1 of 2. Christomarth Rofolio was disappointed in the crowd awaiting his beheading. To start, there could have been more of them. He had always intended to make a show of it when his time finally came. But those in the square below the scaffold were a meager assemblage, most of them only passerbys who had stopped to take in the novelty of his death. They were a quiet bunch as well. During his admittedly short stay, Christomarth had found all the people of Gattisack Township to be sullen and morose. These, though, were especially silent. And as the overweight headsman lifted his axe, Christomarth bemoaned the silence of the crowd. He wanted them loud and yelling. A show needed noise. If they would just call him a cheat, a liar, a thief, then here at the end of his life, he could make an event of it. He'd taken a lot from them already. Why couldn't they give him just that little bit more? The headsman lurched beside Christomarth, his bulk blocking what little sun shone through the clouds. He raised his axe up overhead with a grunt. Christomarth closed his eyes.
"Wait, headsman."
The tromp of heavy boot steps accompanied the voice. Christomarth could not see who climbed the scaffold stairs, bound and kneeling against the block as he was. Fortunately, the newcomer obliged him by walking into view. It was Vigilant Erfinot. Christomarth recalled the floored fellow from last evening's trial, the man responsible for protecting Gattisack Township from folks like Christomarth and his ex-companions. At his side stood the grim-faced deputy enforcer, a hulk with eyes like dark iron and a heavy axe at his side. Vigilant Erfinot squatted down beside Christomarth.
"Sumptuous greetings," he said, smiling grimly around a pipe that bobbed from his lips. "How goes the day, you young mountebank?"
Christomarth shrugged.
"I am endeavoring to get my hair cut. The barber is somewhat overzealous, I suspect, but I shan't hold it against him. I must complain again, however, good Vigilant. Trials in your township are marked not only by an unseemly haste, but a blatant disregard for necessary pomp."
The Vigilant nodded sagely.
"Things are done pragmatically in Gattisack," he replied, sitting back in a squat. "Illuminate me as to where your friends escaped to, and perhaps we will finish trimming your nails for you instead."
Christomarth grimaced. Most of the fingers on his right hand were long missing their tips. Losing any more was untenable.
"Would that I could," he replied. "Alas, there's a surfeit of trust in this world, and it is repaid in treachery and subversion. To wit, they've left me in the lurch and taken to the road with Gattisack's valuables. So much for my career as troop master. Where shall I locate able performers now?"
"Sympathy would be inappropriate," said Erfinot flatly. "You had planned to leave with them as well, after robbing us blind during your little spectacles."
"As I said, there is, perhaps, too much trust in the world, though the people of Gattisack have been relieved of that particular affliction."
Christomarth nodded sadly.
"For teaching this lesson, I shall find myself short my own magnificent head. So it goes. But I had dearly loved running my little circus."
Erfinot puffed on his pipe, sending smoke rings floating skyward. He appeared to be considering something before grunting sharply.
"The vagaries of small enterprise are ever fortune's plaything. he said. Yet perhaps an adjustment can be made in regard to your impending subtraction. The headsman gave a sigh and turned away at the news that he wouldn't be needed for the moment. Down below, the spectators dispersed quietly, going again about their errands. Crystalmarth peered at the vigilant sharply.
How's this? He asked.
Investigation into your paraphernalia uncovered an oddity. Specifically, an old boot at the bottom of your satchel, stuffed with a rolled stocking, in turn concealing a silver amulet. An amulet of rare providence, it must be said. An Illuminat's amulet that speaks of extensive competencies, completely at odds with the mountebank I see before me. Crystalmarth felt his heart tumble into his stomach. And there were worse things than dying. Torture and the stake came readily to mind.
It is the nature of a troopmaster's trinkets to multiply, he replied with a nonchalant shrug.
Certainly for you, you cutpurse rogue, but your inept deflection confirms my suspicion. He nodded in satisfaction. I've a use for you, wherein I care not one whit about the vagaries of your past. One day's travel into the mountains north lies a small village. This village, called Seech, is under the protection of Gattasak Township. Recently, it has requested aid against some manner of creature. Assist the village, and your sentence shall be commuted to the arguably harsher fate of exile from Gattasak.
Crystalmarth blinked. A monster? What kind?
I possess neither the knowledge nor any desire to acquire it, replied Vigilant Erfenot. However, the viability of your reply is bound to the tobacco remaining within my pipe. Crystalmarth Rofolio didn't even have to think about it.
Give me my boots back, and I'll be gone before you can stand up straight.
Clouds rumbled overhead with the promise of mid-morning rain.
I merely state that the excess of concern is unwarranted, said Crystalmarth. Without the bond of trust, no cooperative undertaking is attainable. We share a task, you and I. Thus, trust and brotherly candor must be the bedrock of our new association.
The mountain trail was steep. Rocks jutted out from the dirt, accidental flagstones that twisted Tristomar's step as often as it assisted his climb.
The prisoner thinks he is clever, replied Gattasak's deputy in a rough, rasping voice. The prisoner thinks he could agree to Vigilant Erfenot's offer and simply run off without tending to the village of Seech. But the prisoner will see to his duty while I draw breath. He shall not escape my sight.
Crystalmarth admitted to himself that this had been exactly the plan.
Perhaps too much, Candor, he replied bitterly. I still think that one deserves a modicum of privacy when attending to nature's call.
A chill wind gusted down the flanks of Mount Wur, and through the foothills they climbed. Crystalmarth wrapped his long coat around him more tightly. Its crushed velvet and his wide-brimmed hat were meant more for the stage than these wilds, but they were better than nothing. Vigilant Erfenot had returned most of his belongings, minus anything of real value. It was, frankly, more than Crystalmarth had expected. Unfortunately, the Vigilant had gifted him with one other thing— the massive and taciturn deputy. The fellow offered neither his name nor any interesting conversation, except to specify that he would act as Crystalmarth's warden until Seech's troubles were resolved. They'd spent an awkward night's travel, the opportunity for Crystalmarth to make his planned escape never presenting itself. The deputy truly never let him out of his sight, even staying awake and watchful as they had camped. So far today, the fellow seemed unaffected by his long vigil, which struck Hristomarth as unfair. A creaking rumble sounded up ahead, where the hillside pathway bent behind a copse of great dark trees. Down the path rolled a heavy, ramshackle wagon, filled high with pots, pans, bedrolls, and tools. A man pulled it down the road, grunting and swearing as he went. Behind him on the bench sat a woman, who stared off into the distance, as flat and emotionless as a statue. In her lap was a boy, who looked like he hadn't any tears left with which to weep. All three bore burn marks, singed clothing, and deep scratches. Hristomarth cupped his hands around his mouth, while the deputy beside him moved a hand to the axe on his hip.
"Diverse greetings and salutations appropriate to your philosophy," Hristomarth called. "Would you mind terribly if I, Hristomarth Rofolio, impinge a moment upon your time?"
The man continued down the path, pulling the wagon to a stop just before them. He peered down with wary eyes.
"In all the worlds that be," he replied, "time is considered the most valuable of commodities. Every jot, tittle, ample, or jug of it must be balanced against the corresponding worth of all that a man may or may not be. For instance, I am a scrofulous peasant of dubious parentage at the moment, yet tomorrow I may be the hierarch of the unseen precipice. What can you offer me in exchange for this possibility?"
Hristomarth raised a finger.
"Ah, but future possibilities are rooted well in the circumstances of the past. A tree does not reach its potential without starting as a sapling. Since I see a dirty peasant before me now, the procession of your opportunity is unlikely to change. Therefore, I offer you nothing much at all, really."
The peasant made a sour face.
"This is, unfortunately, well reasoned. What would you have of me?"
"Specifically, where are you from, and whither are you bound with such a furious mien?"
The peasant dropped the arms of his wagon angrily, causing the whole thing to pitch abruptly forward on its single axle. Behind him, the woman shifted her weight and grabbed close her child, never adjusting her gaze from the remote horizon.
"Bah!" said the peasant. "We come from Siege Village, a cursed place that it is. Enough I've had of the scaled monstrosities there. I won't have it. I shall forsake mountain corn for growing turnips upon the plains."
"Turnips are out of fashion at the moment," said Hristomarth. "I suggest pale yams. But Siege, I am bound in that direction, along with my taciturn companion. Can you tell me how far it lies, and what manner of creature dooms it?"
The peasant gestured to where the path disappeared behind the trees.
"Just around a bend and atop the hill. As for the monster..."
A clamor erupted from high up the hill, the cries of dozens of people shouting in alarm.
"By the axioms of Toph," cried the peasant. "They've woken up!"
He grabbed up his wagon and hurtled down the hillside path, the woman and child staring fearfully behind them.
"Wait!" cried Hristomarth. "What is it? What has woken?"
"Dragons!" cried the peasant. "Seven of them!"
Hristomarth made to chase after the man. Then he stopped and thought for a moment. The agreement with Vigilant Erfinot, which he had never really meant to honor, had been for him to contend with a single monster. Seven of them, and dragons at that, seemed rather beyond the scope of what any one fellow could reasonably accomplish. And the amulet in his satchel? That belonged to another, in a time long past. He faced the deputy to make this point, but the man was already staring at him, one hand on his axe. The threat in his eyes was a promise. Hristomarth sighed fatalistically and turned back uphill. The village of Siege lay where indicated. Hristomarth climbed, shadowed by the deputy, maybe another 100 paces before the incline of the path leveled out in front of a wide palisade wall with an open gate. Inside, the village was just as he had imagined it. A small, mean collection of grungy hovels clustered atop the hill, all pressed in together around a central grange. High above loomed the peak of Mount Wur, casting the whole hamlet in shadows. Within the village, pandemonium reigned. The people of Siege ran to and fro. They put out fires, shouted orders, ran for cover, and shuttered windows. Every last person in sight was contending with the dragons, which were surprisingly smaller than Hristomarth had expected. He had never seen a real dragon, though he had heard all the tales. Dragons were powerful, awe-inspiring creatures, possessed of an innate majesty, married to an intimidating brutality. These were not that. They instead resembled overgrown lizards, roughly the size of a dog. 4 chubby legs protruded from a roly-poly torso, covered in thick, brazen scales too large for the hide. A pair of stubby horns protruded from the reptilian head, crowning a trail of short spines that ran down along the serpentine neck all the way to the stinger-tipped tail. 2 floppy wings flailed about from the shoulders, exaggerating the clumsy gait of the monsters as they walked, toppling them over with seemingly every other step. The dragons were ludicrous and laughable, and yet it was all the villagers of Siege could do to deal with them. Each and every one of the monsters was a catastrophe, trailing ruin with every waddling step. The dragon nearest the village gate crawled along the slate-shingled roof of a house. A man and woman stood below it, exhorting the beast in the 32 contemplations of Toph as they tried to pull it down from beneath the overhang. The dragon ignored them, continuing to pry up the shingles with its claws, letting them fall just to hear the noise they made. On the porch next door, an old woman jabbed at another of the monsters with a broom, yelling at the top of her lungs while 3 children cowered behind her. The dragon hunkered low and arched its back, hissing at the woman and swatting at the broom with a chubby paw. A plaintive cry echoed through the village as a long-haired aurochs ran into the street, dragging a string of burning laundry along with it. One of the reptilian horrors clung to its back, adding its own desperate yowl to that of its unhappy mount. It breathed panic, reflexive flames that singed the thick hide of the aurochs, filling the air with the stink of burning hair and crazing the beast even further. Hristomar stepped aside as the aurochs thundered past to clip a nearby shed, threatening to collapse the whole structure. 2 dragons sat at its base, chewing idly at a pair of rain barrels placed just beneath the eaves. 1 barrel suddenly split under this treatment, releasing gallons of rainwater that washed away 1 dragon in a deluge. Its fellow watched with wide eyes, continuing to chew at its own barrel, until that too broke, with similar results. In the middle of the street, a group of villagers contended directly with one of the monsters. They were losing. Though just as chubby as the rest, this dragon moved with a ferocity and speed missing from its brethren. It bit at those who kicked it, tripped those that charged it, and leapt nimbly aside from those who tried to grapple it into submission. 1 peasant, armed with a wood axe, leaned in and struck a blow from behind. The axe head chipped as it skittered off the dragon's armored hide, though it knocked the creature over with the force of the blow. Everyone froze hopefully as the dragon stilled. Then it glared abruptly back at the would-be warrior with a growl. The rest of the peasants scrambled away as the beast leapt at him and landed with a diminutive roar on his face. Hristomarth blinked in surprise. how did Vigilant Aerophonaut expect him to deal with this? He began to step slowly away when a sharp pop echoed right beside him. It came from a wagon set just inside the town gate, filled with heavy sacks of shucked corn, the kernels hard and blue. The seventh dragon hunkered in one of the open sacks, watching rapt as black wisps of smoke rose up from the center of the pile. It breathed another jet of flame, and the kernels blackened, exploding into popped corn. The dragon skittered back, eyes wide in fascination. Crystalmarth edged carefully away from the wagon, shaking his head in amazement. How did this come to pass? Again, what could he do? It was obvious that this went far above and beyond the task appointed to him by Vigilant Aerophonaut. Any association of reasonable men would agree. But the silver amulet was still in his satchel, heavy as a lodestone. And more importantly, while he might slip Gattasak's deputy now if he moved quickly enough, the fellow seemed quite the sort of man who would track him down, day or night, in weather clear or unruly. Crystalmarth sighed and looked around for something to work with. A pile of torches burned merrily nearby, likely used for nightly vigils along the palisade, now lit by the string of burning laundry being dragged around the village by the aurochs. Crystalmarth glanced at them, then the nearby wagon of corn, as an idea took root and grew. He towed one of the burning brands away from the rest, and then gingerly picked it up with his maimed right hand. Careful to avoid the sack inhabited by a dragon, he lit the others aflame before tossing the pitch-soaked stick into the middle. The burlap sacks caught readily alight. A few split, sending corn and the little dragon spilling over the sides of the wagon. The rest grew into a nicely sized fire, the kernels within beginning to smoke and erupt with loud pops. In moments, the popping became a hailstone torrent of reports, drowning out the rest of the cacophony in the village. His plan worked. The dragons all perked their heads up at the sound, curious. Like moths to a candle, they left their various evil amusements and wobbled over to the burning cart, batting at the falling kernels and staring in rapture at the burning wagon.
"To the Grange!" cried an old graybeard villager. "By Toph, they are distracted! Everyone, make haste to the Grange Hall!"
The villagers wasted no time obeying, fleeing for the great hall at the center of Siege. Crystalmarth applauded their prudence. Edging his way around the bonfire and its attendant dragons, he followed along as well. The deputy trailed warily behind. Once inside, the stout wooden door was shut and barred. Crystalmarth moved out of the way as the villagers reinforced the entrance with several heavy wooden barrels. The Grange Hall was one large room, with a podium at one end of a dirt floor and numerous trestle tables filling the space. Silence reigned. The villagers milled about. The air of angry defeat was almost palpable.
"Quickly now," said the graybeard with an authoritative air. "Everyone gather around. I shall lead us all in contemplation of Toph's axioms, that we may have comfort and serenity in the face of our troubles."
"Serenity seems impossibly remote," said one large man. "Action is required. You're the hitman. Send word again to Gattasak Township for assistance."
A chorus of agreement sprung up. Crystalmarth clapped his hands. He waited until all eyes were upon him, then doffed his wide-brimmed hat and bowed low. "Serenity is a dubious concept in these times of woe. However, it must be stated that comfort is quite achievable. Further messages are unnecessary, as Vigilant Aerophonaut of Gattasak has heard your pleas." The villagers met his words with silence. Then the hetman stepped forward.
Who are you, then? And who is the dour associate at your back?
Hristomarth smiled.
I am Hristomarth Rofolio. I recognize him, cried the older woman with the broom. That's the lanky fool who set all our seed corn aflame.
Hristomarth set his hat back on his head as the crowd grumbled.
Such action was necessary. The dragons were attracted by the noise. As well, I have done you an additional service. Mountain corn has fallen out of favor this season. The hue of its seeds are popularly seen to be inauspicious.
A disappointed murmur swept through the room. The farmers of the village kicked despondently at the dirt floor of the hall.
But no matter, continued Hristomarth. You are freed from the agricultural misstep and may now plant again. That is, once the matter of your scaly infestation has been dealt with. Pray, how did this misfortune come to pass?
The Greybeard folded his arms across his chest, shaking his head.
It is the fault of old Nesna Toth, he said. Though she is at the end of her span, somehow the worm has whelped one final time. The clutch of monsters outside are her children, evicted from her cave high upon the slopes of Mount Wur to fend for themselves. For it is known that all dragons are terrible parents.
A chorus of agreement swept the room.
One moment, said Hristomarth. The scaled horrors outside are children?
Aye, said the Greybeard. Draconic whelplings. Nesna Toth landed near to the village 1 week ago, gave them each a mighty lick with her tongue, and flew off. The wormlings set up a truly dire caterwauling at being discarded so. They trouble us now out of heart sickness for their lost mother. Also, it is to be believed, because they enjoy it. Now, our only peace is when they are weary and asleep, which never lasts long enough to make significant repairs.
The peasant woman with the broom stepped forward.
What is needed, she said, is someone to march up to Mount Wur and confront Nesna Toth. Someone to convince her to take her hellions back in and care for them in a properly respectable manner.
But who could make the journey?
Asked one farmer.
More, who could intimidate the dragon enough to make her take her wormlings back?
An Illuminat could do it, said the woman.
Possibly, interrupted Hristomarth. Though this is a fruitless and ignominious line of inquiry, the Illuminats are gone, dead and burned at the stake for their crimes. Good riddance aside, we must focus on tangible solutions to the problem at hand.
He glanced a farmer with an artificial hand.
Or hook, as the case may be.
The crippled farmer nodded sagely.
The rumors of the lowlands rarely hold much sway with us, said the hetman. Though your point is well taken, and pragmatism must be our watchword.
He snapped his fingers.
Ah, but did you not state that you two had been sent by the village of Gadisak Township?
He looked to the hulking deputy standing behind Hristomarth.
You there, good sir! You've the mien of a powerful warrior. Please, climb the slopes of Mount Wur and confront the source of our troubles. Deliver us from this blight.
The deputy held up one hand.
I am here to enforce the rulings of the Vigilant.
He gestured to Hristomarth.
This man has been sent to aid you. His task, then, should be to climb the slopes of Mount Wur and deal with the dragon. I will merely follow him wherever he should go.
That last bit had been directed squarely at Hristomarth, who sighed inwardly. The villagers of Siege peered at him anew. The hetman shrugged.
Those in need can rarely afford the luxury of choice, he said finally. A great hero of the village, once an Illuminat, left his blade with us. With it we shall arm you, and thus you will face down Nesnatoth.
The assembled villagers of Siege grumbled their agreement. Outside, something crashed loudly, accompanied by the startled yet triumphant yowls of the wormlings. A renegade wordsmith, an unrelenting raconteur, Jonathan Burgess has forsaken the more traditional paths of publishing in order to blaze his own trail. Author of the crowdfunded Don Hawk trilogy, his short fiction has appeared in Subtopian magazine and been the recipient of the Galavan Writing Award. A Matter of Scale is a short story based in his The Scaled Scoundrel Chronicles universe. If you would like to read more about what becomes of Nesnatoth's brood, later this week, Jonathan is publishing two brand new novels, A Conspiracy of Rogues and Rogues Unmasked, books 1 and 2 of the Black Scale Thief duology, available for pre-order on Amazon. They follow the young dragons of the Black Scale crew, raised by a thief and out to steal a fortune. When not penning tales about sky pirates and fat dragons, Jonathan Burgess can be found haunting the Pacific Northwest, complaining about his beer. While he occasionally dabbles in dystopia and science fiction, his first love will always be comedic fantasy. For more information, you can find him at brasshorsebooks.com. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you like the story, I post new ones every Monday and Friday. So be sure to hit that subscribe button. I'm Chris Herron, and that's it for today's Tall Tale TV.